This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show today. Lately, we've been talking about gun legislation. We've been going on and on about what's happening with guns and how do we control them? How do we control ammunition sales? How many clips that we should have? What number of rounds should be in clips? Of course, with the tragedy in Sandy Hook in December of 2012, this is very, very relevant issues. And there's so much conversation about it. We wanted to talk about it today with organization who's been covering this, the Center for Public Integrity. We've got Fred Schulte on the phone with us right now. He's done a number of investigative reports on some of these issues, and a recent article that he produced talked about ATF, which is Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, their struggle to close down firearm dealers. This is one of many issues that's going on in terms of guns and the sale of guns, and who should be selling guns and who shouldn't be selling guns, and who are the people who are buying the guns and everything else. Fred, thank you for coming on Fed Access.
Well, it's good to be here.
Hey, you know, your article talked about ATF, and it got just some backdrop of, you know, we hear a little bit about ATF, but, you know, ATF, after kind of the Waco thing a long time ago, you didn't really hear a Waco, Texas tragedy. You didn't really hear a lot about ATF in the news as much. And then you heard about the kind of the Fast and the Furious program and other things like that. You don't really hear a lot of positive things going on with ATF. Walk us to, in terms of the Bureau, what have you been finding out, what's been going on with ATF?
Well, we've focused primarily on their inspection process for inspecting some 65,000 gun dealers around the country, and they don't seem to be able to satisfy anybody. I mean, the gun control supporters are saying that you can go years and years without an inspection, and then even when you're inspected and they find serious violations, that the agency seldom does anything about it. On the other side, the NRA and many gun rights groups think that, and some dealers think that the agency's way too aggressive and that they're sort of willy-nilly going around harassing dealers and trying to drive them out of business. So there's kind of two diametrically opposed views here. But what we found is that the process pretty much goes on in secret, this inspection process. So it's difficult to really try to figure out who's right and who's wrong. But there's no question that they don't get around to inspecting dealers very often. And we wrote about one dealer who had not been inspected in 30 years of selling fairly large numbers of firearms.
Right.
And I think in general, many dealers go years and years without seeing any inspector at all. And they did the last year for which they have any statistics, they did about 13,000 inspections around the country out of some 65,000 dealers. And in only 71 cases did they take action to shut a dealer down.
Wow.
But in many others, they found violations, but they didn't consider them serious enough to shut the dealer down.
You know, with the ATF and looking at the inspection process, are we talking about a situation where an agency is either underfunded, undermanned, I mean, or both? Or, I mean, are we talking about more negligence on the part of the agency? I mean, or are we talking about all three?
Well, I think that many people would say it's all three, that they're underfunded and deliberately so. And I think that there's definitely concern, at least among people that are for tighter gun control, that Congress has pretty much tied the agency's hands by a number of pieces of legislation. One is, for example, they can only visit a dealer once a year for a routine inspection. No matter what they find, they're limited by law from doing that. They also aren't allowed to impose any sort of an inventory system on dealers. And so there's a number of things that they are, in fact, not allowed to do because Congress made that so.
Is this the something that, you know, you're finding in your reporting that NRA is definitely kind of even pushing to even, tie the hands more of the ATF? I mean, they, you know, as you mentioned just a few minutes ago, you were saying that NRA is saying that the ATF is being overly aggressive, you know, and so the image amongst gun owners, you know, that the NRA represents, they always use the ATF as like the boogeyman who's going to come and take all your guns away and everything else, where you're saying that, you know, the ATF can hardly even get around to the large number of dealers out there. And do we even have an accurate number of the dealers that are out there in these various states?
No, we don't. And in terms of the first question, there is absolutely no question that the NRA has tried to make it more difficult for ATF to revoke dealers. I mean, they have lobbied extensively and through the years to weaken the inspection process and to make it more difficult. So there's no question that but from their point of view, they think that the agency needs to be reeled in, because a group like the NRA isn't watching them closely, that they would just go and willy-nilly start shutting dealers down.
You know, but in terms of the dynamic of the ATF with the lack of the manpower and everything else, I mean, from your investigative reporting, the truth of it is, if they can only visit one person at a time, I mean, one dealer for one time, and let me make sure I got this correct. So the law states that they can only visit a dealer one time, and even if they find violations, they cannot go back to that dealer even if violations are found? Is that the case?
Yeah, for 1 year. They can only visit one time during a year.
Jeez. And so with that visit, they have to make sure they get everything documented on that one visit, or they'll be in violation of the law. And so how do they follow up to make sure that now that the dealer is in compliance?
Well, they don't. I mean, they only have 700-some inspectors for the whole country, and so they can only get around it's a period of years before they can get around to a dealer. About in 2004, the Inspector General's office came down on the ATF over this issue and said that they really should be inspecting dealers every 3 years. The agency has never come close to doing that, and they told me recently that they hoped maybe they could get around to each dealer once every 5 years. So 5 years, I mean, if you... it depends on how you look at it. I mean, if you look at it, well, this is an inspection program, just like inspecting pharmacies, restaurants, and that sort of thing, you would think that they would get there more often.
But, you know, you got a situation where dealers could be basically either selling illegal firearms. I mean, they could be selling a number of illegal products. They could be doing. And did you find that in your reporting? I mean, where you have a place who's 30 years and never been inspected, where you're having complaints that people are possibly selling firearms that are not legal or, you know, the ones that have been put on the ban list?
Right. Well, you don't really have that, because what the inspectors are doing is they're coming in and looking at paperwork. They're not actually looking and shaking down the place. They're saying, please show us your records of all your sales and your acquisitions. They call it you have to keep a book. You have to keep a book of every time you purchase a firearm and every time you sell a firearm, and then the buyer of that firearm has to fill out a form to make sure that you're not prohibited from buying it because you're a convicted felon or mentally ill or one of a number of things that prohibit you from having a firearm. So when they come in and they look at the paperwork and they see, well, wait a minute, you can't reconcile the inventory here, or where's the record for the following gun? That's, you know, we know that your records show that you bought it, but you have no records for when you sold it. Or they look at the forms that someone filled out, and they answered, it says, are you a convicted felon? And the person checked yes, and they sold them the gun anyway. You have a lot of situations like that. Now, it's difficult to go from there to say that, well, a crime was committed because of that, somebody died because of that, public safety was compromised because of that. But you're not following the law.
You know, with this situation, I mean, and it seems as if we've got a serious scenario where a number of guns and a number of people who are being sold guns who are not either going through background checks, and dealers, if they're not afraid of being inspected, and even the dynamic of if an inspector walks in, they can't even walk around and actually do an inventory of the actual guns. They're just looking at paperwork. This seems to be a serious, serious flaw in the system, you know. And what I want to do is kind of talk about, you had a story about this Pennsylvania gun deal. I want to talk about that a little bit when we come back after break, and then kind of talk about how he kept on fighting, and the magistrate and judge, you know, he was fighting to get his license back, and it kept on going through the court process. I want to go into that a little bit more, and maybe what are possible solutions to this problem, if we're even seeing anything on the horizon. We're talking to Fred Schulte. He is an investigative reporter at the Center for Public Integrity. You can find him at publicintegrity.org. He had a recent article on ATF struggle to close down firearm dealers, and you can find that article on their front page. A good read, and it's definitely relevant about what's going on today with all the gun talk and gun legislation changes and everything else that are possibly pending coming up in Congress. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having an interesting conversation about what's going on with this dynamic of the guns. ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, or the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. They're the agency who's supposed to be out there on the lead of dealing with firearms and firearm dealers and making sure that they're in compliance and selling the right firearms to the right people. But we're finding out that this may not be the case. An investigative reporter, Fred Schulte, he's on the line with us right now, and he did a story, investigated this situation with ATF. He had an article on the Center for Public Integrity, which he works for. You can find it at publicintegrity.org. But he talked about ATF's struggle to close down firearm dealers who may not be in compliance, who may be doing some things that are illegal, selling to people who should not be allowed to have firearms. These people are not being inspected the correct way, maybe not being inspected at all. Fred, we were talking, I mentioned about this dealer that you reported on in Pennsylvania, basically he was struggling and he was overwhelmed to keep up and he couldn't keep registry of all his stuff. And the inspectors tried to basically close him down. What was going on with this situation? He kind of went back and forth with the courts. What was going on with this one particular dealer?
Okay. Well, he had been in business since the 1970s and selling guns that had never seen an inspector. From the ATF in all that period of time. And then in January of 2010, the ATF arrived at his shop and started looking at the records. And what they saw is that he could not properly account for more than 3,000 guns that he had bought and or sold during the past 3 years.
Oh, just 3 years. I was thinking you're going to say 3,000 guns over the past 30 years, but you're talking about 3,000 guns over the past 3 years. That's crazy.
Right. And now he had some, you know, some records of who he had sold them to, but the law requires him to keep a book so that the inspector can come in and see when you bought it and when you sold it. And he said that, well, he had become overwhelmed trying to keep track of all of this, and he had tried to put it on a computer, and the computer crashed, and he lost all his records. And he also said that he'd been ill, and so that he just became overwhelmed and stopped doing it. Well, the ATF, you know, looked at this as a serious violation, and so they said, well, they sent him a letter saying, we're going to revoke your license. And but it doesn't end there. He then had an administrative hearing, and when the administrative hearing was over and the agency decided, yes, it was going to move forward and attempt to revoke his license, he's able to challenge that in federal court, and that's what he's done. He's filed a lawsuit against the ATF to try to overturn the decision, to get a federal judge to overturn the decision. And one of the things that this usually ends up that while this process is going on, a dealer stays in business. So this has been now some going on for more than 14 months. And in many of the cases that we looked at that had gone through federal courts, years went by before this matter was decided. And often the ATF would win the case in the end, but a lot of times it was 3-4 years. So a dealer would be stay in business for 3 or 4 years after they tried to shut them down just by going to court. And, you know, just because anytime you take things into court, it takes a long time.
Wow. So instead of it being a situation of that you have been found non-compliant, there are 3,000 records that you can account for. These are serious violations. They need to shut down immediately. Then it's really that they can keep, like you said, they can keep on going and keep on fighting this for years and years. If they get a good lawyer, then they can stay operational, still make money, still do things that are possibly illegal in terms of gun sales. And that seems to be the law right now.
Well, they can in fact stay in business because the ATF. Well, the ATF. I mean, they have to. The ATF has to allow them during the administrative hearing process to stay in business. But as a general rule, the agency often doesn't object to the dealer staying in business while this is being litigated in the courts. And like I said, that can take years.
Wow. You know, with this whole process, it seems as if, and this goes into what's being talked about right now in terms of legislation about more mental health and other dynamics, people having more background investigations. But you've got these gun dealers who are not being inspected. So we may have a situation where there are people who are not ever being put on the rolls in terms of buying a firearm, who are never, ever being, you know, conducted a background investigation. Even if a new law went in place, then that would also mean that a number of people would not get either the mental health checks there's a number of steps that could be skipped and somebody could still buy a gun legally. You know, and this is not even, they're going to legal dealers. We're not even talking about illegal sales of guns. Is that what the worry is? And is that why you did this piece?
Well, that was one of the things that we were interested in seeing. I mean, as you mentioned, there's a lot of talk about new laws. And then some people are saying, well, wait a minute, what about the laws that are already on the books? And we wanted to look at the laws that are already on the books as it pertained to the inspections of dealers, and also look a little bit as to why the system operates the way it does. And that's why, you know, I was mentioning earlier that there's a view that the NRA has used its friends in Congress in order to cripple the ability of the ATF to conduct these inspections. And you know, that's a view that one side holds. But like I said, this is the kind of thing where there doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground. I mean, you either think that the ATF is, as you mentioned, is the boogeyman, or that they don't do anything. And you know, is the truth somewhere in the middle? Well, it's hard to tell from what we looked at, but you really can't look too closely at this because the whole process is done on a confidential basis, and
right,
it's very difficult to see. The kind of, you can't just dial in, log on to an ATF site and look up a local gun dealer and see if he's had or she's had any problems. It doesn't work like that. The entire process is confidential, and the only way you can find out what violations the inspection found is when they move to revoke it, and then the dealer challenges it in court, and then.
But
the only way you find the court records, that's what we did. I looked at basically a dozen cases that had gone into the federal court system.
Right.
And of course, the records there are public records. So that's the only time that the allegations even surface.
But even I was just thinking about it, you know, it seems as if that's still a process for you to have to go down to the courthouse and go into and find these records or those records are not just readily accessible to the public in terms of just being, I mean, you can find somebody's traffic court records sometimes a lot easier than you could find maybe a non-compliant gun dealer, it seems.
That's definitely true. There's no question about that. You can file a Freedom of Information Act request with the ATF to try to find out about a dealer's history, but the people that I've talked to that have filed those found that they got back documents with just a lot of black lines through them.
So a lot of the stuff is still this whole secret. I mean, did you talk to the ATF and ask why the secrecy on this? I mean, what is the reason for secrecy of a program that is supposed to, like any inspection program, whether it be EPA or FDA or anything like that, these programs are built in order to keep the public safe. Why so much secrecy?
Well, I wasn't able to really get a good answer to that. I mean, from our point of view, I mean, it should be open. It should be just like, as you mentioned, a restaurant inspection. I mean, if a restaurant has bugs, you know, you want to know that before
right.
you go and eat there.
Exactly.
And, you know, if a gun dealer in your neighborhood is, in fact, repeatedly being issued citations by the ATF, whether they were trying to revoke the dealer or not, I mean, I think that the public does have a right to know that kind of information. But the agency seems to be operating with kid gloves in a lot of ways, and I think that they think that they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. I mean, they seem to be in a no-win situation because the you know, people's feelings are so intense on either side of this debate that it's difficult for them to try to thread some kind of a middle ground.
You know, Fred, you mentioned something that you start looking at the current gun laws and kind of seeing what kind of fire that ATF had under his belly already in order to enforce the current gun laws. Did you find, in terms of looking at those things, are there enough gun laws already on the books, but they're just not being enforced? Is it really a matter that we do need new gun laws? I mean, you know, as you looked a little bit deeper into the issue, which one did you see?
Well, there are laws on the books that are not being enforced, okay. And I, you know, don't really. I'm not an expert in this field, so I don't really know exactly what laws should be on the books. But I do know that that when the agency doesn't get around to inspecting somebody for 30 years, then it's hard to argue that the law that's on the books is being properly enforced.
Right. We're going to come back and take a quick break. I want to go a little bit more. You had another article that talked about internet sales of ammunition. And again, this is another piece in which, you know, that's drawing a lot of scrutiny about how much ammunition can people buy, the caliber of ammunition that people can buy and everything else. And, you know, and why people need to have, you know, either so much ammunition. Should this be regulated a lot more? I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking about guns. We're talking about gun laws. We're talking about the dynamics of, you know, should there be some change in these gun laws in America? What's on the books right now seems to not being enforced right now. Should this, you know, process be looked at with a lot more scrutiny, especially as you have agencies like the ATF who are not necessarily complying with the full law, not inspecting all the gun dealers, and these violations are happening where people are getting guns from legal gun dealers that probably should not be getting guns. We're talking to Fred Schulte. He is an investigative reporter at the Center for Public Integrity. They do a number of investigative reports that deal with government and other areas as well. You can find their website at publicintegrity.org. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having a great conversation about what's going on with guns and gun laws and also the enforcement of the laws that are on the books right now. Talking to Fred Schulte, he's an investigative reporter who's done a couple articles that are focused in on the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and their struggle to close down firearm dealers, and then also focusing in on kind of the internet sales of ammunition that's happening right now. And then should there be more regulation to really control the dynamic of the ammunition that's going out there and being sold on the internet as well? You can find their information at publicintegrity.org, but it's the Center for Public Integrity. Got some great articles on there that deals with government issues, not just the gun law situation, but national security, the environment, and everything else. Fred, this article that you wrote, when you really kind of dug in and investigated about the internet ammunition sales, what were you finding? Why did you get into this, and what were you finding?
Well, I think when we just did something like very simply, like if you look on YouTube and you look at, you know, videos, and there's a number of people who've posted videos of the truck pulling up to their house and leaving off this big box, and then they tear it open, and you look in there, and there's like thousands of rounds of, you know, .223 caliber rifle fire. And, you know, it just seemed that, you know, I think most people maybe were a little surprised that when they see something like that. I think a lot of people that I talked to were surprised that just about anybody can buy huge amounts of ammunition over the internet.
You know, with that being the case, with these online dealers, and we kind of said just about anybody, there does not have to seem to be that there's security, or there doesn't even seem to be any kind of limitation especially when we've had, you know, threats and we've had these active shooting cases. But we've not only had those, but we've also had, you know, possible domestic terrorist situations in which, you know, we had certain maybe militias or whoever, you know, who had threatened the government or, you know, had been, you know, using ammunition and maybe gathering up stockpiles and ammunition and this anti-government talk. Is it the case that there is no checking at all with these internet? It's like whoever has a credit card and whoever pays for it is going to be delivered there?
Right. Well, it's hard to know that for sure. But up to 1986, you couldn't buy ammunition through the mails.
Okay.
And you had to go to a local gun dealer to buy the ammunition. But the law changed in 1986. And now you can, you know, sell it through the mail and the internet. And what these dealers do is that they have a box that you check to say, yeah, I'm over 18, and yeah, I'm not mentally ill, and I'm not a felon, and then take a credit card number, and then they send it to you. So, as to how they actually know that that you're not a felon. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on them. I mean, these are legitimate businesses, which they're quick to point out that there's nothing illegal at all about doing this. But I think some of the gun control advocates point out that there are a couple of high-profile shooting cases. In fact, the shooter did buy thousands of rounds through one of these internet-based ammunition dealers.
Well, I guess the key thing about it is that there can remain a level of that you're an anonymous person. If you can ship this stuff to different places. I mean, you may not even have to ship it to your house or wherever you ship it to, but you can remain anonymous. You never have to go into a store, and nobody can ever even see who you are in terms of buying this large volume of ammunition. In looking at this, is there a trigger point? You know how, especially after Oklahoma, where fertilizer was used for with the Timothy McVeigh and the bombing, where it said if you bought so much of this kind of fertilizer, it would trigger something, and then it would kind of get to a federal agency to investigate. What is there anything that's going on in terms of this law that if a person buys so much ammunition, or if a person buys a certain kind of ammunition, did you find? I don't know if you found anything in your report about that, but is anything like that going on?
No, there's no restrictions on that at all. I mean, you can buy as many rounds as you want. And, you know, in the other side of the story is that some people that do a lot of target shooting can go through a lot of rounds.
Mm-hmm.
So
True. That's
what their argument. Their argument is, well, this is a legitimate business, and I can use several hundred rounds very quickly in some of these weapons on the range, absolutely legitimately.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, what you're really doing here is if you say you can't buy it over the mails and you have to go face to face, you're going to pay more money. And that it's their sort of a pro-consumer argument is being made that these are bulk sales where you can get a good deal on ammo, and you're a law-abiding citizen. Why shouldn't you be able to do that? On the other hand, as you're saying, that they have no idea who you are. And, if you have like that guy that was that's accused in the Aurora that's got, you know, dressed up like the Joker or something, I think that if he walked into a gun store looking like that, I don't think anybody would sell him 6,000 rounds.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, you even had a situation, I think, in one of the forts where somebody was trying to buy some ammunition, but they kind of saw them being suspicious, and they called about him, and then this guy was planning to do some stuff at a base, you know, where you had eyes on somebody and a good gun dealer, you know, followed their instincts and was able to possibly prevent something from happening.
Right.
Yeah. You know, with that being the case, I mean, what is being proposed in terms of legislation to these online sales? I mean, what kind of bills and what kind of legislation is being proposed?
Okay, well, there's both state and federal bills. I mean, there's a federal bill in Congress that just would ban the online sales of ammunition. There's also some states that have either taken action against this or are about to take action or are trying to take action. And in California, there's a bill to restrict ammunition sales, and also in New York State. So there are bills being proposed. They're being, you know, it's adamantly opposed by a number of groups. And I think that it's not just the NRA. I mean, I think a lot of people that are gun owners who just don't want to be restricted in where they can buy their ammunition. And their argument is that, you know, they're not nuts. I mean, they're law-abiding citizens, and they should be able to buy the ammo. You know, the problem is then you have an incident like in Aurora, and you know, that guy went and bought 6,000 rounds off the internet,
right,
and turns out to be nuts. Then you know, it's a dilemma.
Is the state, you know, are the laws and what you're seeing, is it a better chance to get the states to pass, you know, how New York went through and passed, you know, gun law very, very quickly after things happened? Is there more fuel to get this done on the state level than maybe on the federal level?
Well, in some states, I mean, you know, like if you've been watching Maryland, that the assembly is now looking at some of the things that Governor O'Malley is trying to propose, and it's pretty darn controversial. So, and of course, I think in New York they moved very quickly with tightening the laws before the opposition really had a chance to marshal its forces. But I think that in most states there's considerable opposition to some of these bills, to like crack down on ammunition and to you know, the magazine, large capacity magazines. There's a lot of opposition to that, and it isn't like all just NRA supporters. I mean, a lot of people don't support that.
And proposed federal legislation would completely end it. Is that right? It would completely end the online sale. So it would put like this. I know you mentioned the place I call AmmoSeek.com, but it would put places like that out of business. Is that?
There is a bill. Yes, there is a bill to do that. Now, whether it's going to pass, you know, I don't have any idea, but I know that there will be absolutely fierce opposition to that.
Right. The NRA would be all up into that mix right there. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about, kind of pull this all together in terms of, you know, you looked at these things in terms of online sales and the gun dealers and everything else. What solutions is there possibly for this argument, if there are any that may be coming out that you may be seeing as you're talking to different people? We want to talk about that as we come back. We're talking about what's going on with the guns and what's going on with firearms in terms of gun sales with firearm dealers, in terms of the laws to ban either ammunition sales, the sales of magazines and everything, online sales of ammunition. We're talking about what is possibly being done to change what's happening with our guns, and being able to control people who shouldn't have guns to get a handle of those guns and then keep people safe in America. Talking to Fred Schulte, he is at the Center for Public Integrity. He's an investigative reporter who's doing some work on this issue and following this issue. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been talking about what's going on with the gun debate. As we all know, in state legislations and in the federal, in Congress and everywhere else, the NRA on TV, this argument is being held in public about what should be done about guns. After we've had situations like Aurora, Colorado, where a person walked into a theater and shot so many people. We had situations like Sandy Hook. We've had a number of different incidents, even just this year, school shootings and over a thousand, at least over a thousand cases where there have been shootings and deaths in America just in the beginning of this year, in January 2013, and kind of going on to the first couple of days of February. A situation that is some people are calling a desperate situation about how do we deal with guns in America and how do we control certain things so that there are not many fatalities that are happening anymore. We're talking to Fred Schulte. He is an investigative reporter at the Center for Public Integrity who is following this issue, has been reporting about firearm dealers who are not in compliance with ATF and the gun laws, and also talking about internet sales of ammunition. And should this thing be banned and what's going on? Fred, in your reporting and talking to so many different people and talking to different organizations and the Violence Policy Center and other places like that, what are people saying is a possible solution? I mean, you know, is anybody coming up with anything? Is the NRA saying, hey, this is what we think will help the problem? Is the Violence Policy Center saying this is what we think is going to help the problem? Where do we come to a compromise?
Well, that's a good question, Derek. I mean, you do hear a lot of different things from different people. I mean, I think that, one of the things in terms of the question of inspecting the dealers, I mean, I would offer a personal opinion that, there needs to be more transparency about that. I mean, the public needs to know what ATF is doing, how often it's doing it, and what this process entails and whether it's adequate. And to be hiding behind, the Freedom of Information Act and not disclosing these results, I think is not something they should be doing. That's a personal opinion. What I'm hearing from others is that there needs to be some sort of a punishment system for dealers to violate the law, short of, well, we're going to revoke your license. I mean, they need to be able to fine them or impose other penalties or something that would get their attention. And I would think also, these should be made public so that the public can see that there's a dealer out there who has been fined by the ATF for violating the rules. I mean, the public should be able to see that. I think some other people are saying, too, that the ATF shouldn't just be trying to equally target all gun dealers, because most of them are totally on the up and up. They sell to law-abiding citizens. They're doing what they're doing is totally legal. And they probably don't need to be looked at as closely as the certain people that they can quickly identify that, a lot of guns that came from such and such a dealer ended up being used in crimes. Therefore, they should target that dealer, and they should have a way to target the true bad apples and get them out of business or more if warranted. Right. And I think that's kind of true of anything that you look at as a reporter. You know, if you write about doctors or something, I mean, almost all of them are doing a really good job, but there's always a few out there, this little teeny group out there that causes a lot of problems. Right. So the ATF should be able to figure out how to, and shouldn't be impeded by the NRA or Congress or anybody else from finding a way to really go after bad dealers and discipline them.
Are we looking at a more of a, because the ATF has not had an official head of their agency for quite some time now. They've had an acting director. Is it more of a leadership scenario in terms of saying we need to get a new director in here who now has a full mandate to really get things going? Is that, I mean, do you see a almost a demoralization of the agency? Are you hearing that, where the lack of leadership and the lack of either kind of funding or backing, like you mentioned, damned if we do, damned if we don't. Is that one of the main issues right there?
Well, I'm not really an expert on the ATF, but mm-hmm. you do hear that for sure. And I think that any place that's rudderless, leaderless, and just kind of drifting out there is not going to be something that's going to be, you know, looking for bold new incentives, right. or I mean new initiatives, I'm sorry, to handle problems. I mean, I think that they may just be going through the motions, and I would think that it's a demoralizing situation not to have a chief.
You know, with the conversations about, you know, what can be done, it is, and also even with the laws that are on the books right now, are you really getting a sense that, we truly are? And maybe kind of you're hearing it after Sandy Hook, and as a reporter who's kind of talking about this, and we're talking to the dealers and talking to, you know, different nonprofits or people who are focusing on policy. Is the Sandy Hook thing still very much in people's minds, or is it just really a matter, is NRA just kind of waiting and just kind of buying its time, and 6 months down the line, this is not going to be an issue anymore because there would have been other things that have happened? And I mean, what are you getting on the sense of this? For
well, that may in fact be the case.
Okay.
And it also, it may be true that rushing into some action is not a great idea. Either. I mean, some of these things, I mean, they're immensely complicated. You know, they seem really, really simple. Well, let's just ban this, or let's just, you know, make this illegal. But then you have to look at what will that really have an impact?
Mm-hmm.
Will if you impose all these new laws and, if you say, well, you can't sell this kind of a weapon, then somebody then like the Aurora guy, you know, finds a different kind of weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's really difficult to try to balance these things. It's not just a matter of, well, there's the NRA and they're all, on this extreme, they take this extreme position and believe that everybody should have guns. And then on the other side, there's people that say, well, you know, nobody should have a gun. I mean, it isn't really, neither one of those positions is seems to reflect the reality when you try to look at, well, wait a minute, what about the mental health issue?
Mm-hmm.
And how are we going to actually make mental health information available so that any dealer can, you know, just, you know, call up a system and find out that somebody went to a psychiatrist? And do we really want that?
Right.
And so every one of these kinds of solutions, it seems that, you know, precipitates all kinds of new potential problems.
New challenges.
May not help.
Right.
And I think what everyone wants to do is see an end to these mass tragedies, no question about it. But it's not that easy to figure out what actually will accomplish that and what just, you know, is a waste of time.
So, and NRA is basically, I mean, they're using their kind of lobbying dynamic to really anything that's being, it seems as if anything that's being proposed, and are you finding this, anything that's being proposed at this moment in time, they're pushing back on pretty heavily. I mean, they seem to have a very, very kind of strong constituency in Congress and other legislators, whether it be state or federal, but they seem to be pushing back on everything. Is that the case?
Well, not. I mean, they're pushing back on everything that they perceive to be an attack on the Second Amendment,
mm-hmm.
and that's you know, their prerogative to do that. That's what they think that their constituents want done, and that's what they believe. And so that you know, when you take that position, I mean, they're not pushing back on quote everything. I mean, they're pushing back on these things that
mm-hmm.
they're in favor of. Well, some of the things that they've said they're in favor of, you know, a lot of people wonder about that, like, you know, give teachers guns. I mean,
right.
You know, I don't know. I don't really want to get into the politics of all that
sure.
much, but, you know, I don't think that the average guy, yes, the average guy, do you think the teacher ought to have a sidearm?
Right.
And that's going to help?
I think most people would be like, well, maybe not. We want to keep our classrooms a little bit gun free.
Well, I think that they might think that. So, but I mean, I do think that they legitimately are trying to preserve what they believe is the Second Amendment and their right to bear arms. And so, I mean, you can't fault them for trying to lobby. I mean,
right.
that's the American way.
Right. Right. You know, it is a complicated issue, a lot of privacy issues, and also it seems like there's a lot of economic issues because a new law would possibly put, you know, like mentioned, a legitimate business out of business, possibly, who necessarily by no fault of their own just kind of got caught up in the mix of a tragedy. I mean, that seems to also be a major concern about how the economic dynamics of the country. Would you say that?
Oh, that is. And I think some of the people that are on the side of the, you know, the gun control lobby would say that you know, the NRA is really representing the manufacturers of these weapons,
right.
And that it's an enormous multi-billion-dollar market, and so any restrictions and I think that, you know, businessmen of any ilk would bristle at when you try to restrict their ability to conduct their business,
right,
no matter what the business is. So you're definitely going to see that. I mean, I think that this one, of course, is a very emotional issue, and, you know, people getting killed, and so,
right.
But, you know, like I said, I wouldn't claim to have any real insight into the proper legislative answers to,
Well, your articles provide some good insight, Fred, and this is some good work on covering it. We're going to definitely kind of stay in touch with you as you look at this, and I know you're covering many other things more. You guys at the Center of Public Integrity are doing a great job over there. Thank you for being on Fed Access. We've been talking to Fred Schulte. He is an investigative reporter at the Center for Public Integrity. You can find them at publicintegrity.org. He's just been doing some great work on the ATF and their inability to close down some firearm dealers who are not in compliance, and also about internet ammunition sales and what's going on with that. Fred, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.